what does the existing culture look like? What do the people want? What are they built for? Mm-hmm. What kind of culture do they thrive in?
Absolutely. What kind of culture does your team thrive in? And what kind of leaders do you have? Because if you have a company that is largely based in, again, let's go back and say learning, and then you have a supervisor who's heavily results-based, he's going to have trouble leading in your organization. And actually, I think we've seen this scenario play out many times, where someone can be a strong leader and a good leader, but they're leading to a different culture, and that can be a problem. Welcome to The Critical Path with Mary and Jason, a podcast about business development, company culture, and loving the place you work just a little bit more. This is episode 12, and we're going to be talking about the value of company culture.
Rawr.
I don't know what that's called for. I mean, company culture is cool.
It is sexy.
I don't know that it's lion level of sexy.
I'm not lion.
It's not like Rihanna in a cheetah suit level sexy.
Is that sexy?
I mean, probably. She Rihanna. She could rock anything.
Okay. Enough about that.
I mean, talking about Rihanna and talking about company culture kind of go together.
And what you don't talk about at work? Rihanna, NSF.
What? You can talk about Rihanna at work.
What about Chris Brown?
A, B, R. Always be Rihanna.
RBG?
Different. And I'm not discussing Chris Brown. I refuse to discuss Chris Brown.
Right, what are we talking about today?
So we talk a lot about the idea that we want systems at work. We want policies at work. And the
policy. Everybody can get behind a policy.
Well, it's true. Mm-hmm. So the policies that we have, that's all that we have as a company. We often get owners who say, well, I really listen to my employees. I do things a certain way. But if there's not a policy that tells the rest of the team that that's what we want them to do, then the company doesn't do things that way.
The best used policies are put in a drawer somewhere.
No, not true. Not true, and that could be its own whole episode. But today we're not talking about policies. The idea, though, of a policy is if I work here, if I own the company, and I want everyone to prioritize keeping the customer happy, if I don't write that down somewhere and share it with the team, then that's not going to be part of how we do business. In the same way, we have what's called company culture, and company culture is the unwritten component of that. Company culture is what we value and what we think is important in an unwritten sense. It's never anything that gets written in our policies, but it's just it's what exists at the company. So we have a session called Terraforming Mars, mm-hmm. where we talk about the idea that different planets have different livability indexes.
What is terraforming?
I'm getting to that.
Okay.
So if you know anything about Mars, you know that right now people can't live there. Terraforming is a conversation about a scientific process that would theoretically make a planet livable. But the real idea is there are planets that are really cold, really hot, don't have breathable air, things can't grow there, and nobody would ever want to be there, and you would pretty much die instantaneously if you went there.
That sounds like a couple of certain companies.
It does sound like a couple of certain. We have met some of those companies. Mm-hmm. We do not work with any of those companies. On the other hand, you have Earth, which even though sometimes here in Seattle when it gets around January and we walk outside and it's 45 degrees and we all complain that you can't possibly live out there, the truth is Earth is really livable. Mm-hmm. Things grow everywhere, even all summer long when you wish that they wouldn't. And the temperature is really not, especially in Seattle, ever where it's going to kill you. So in that same way that there's that spectrum between Mars and Earth, company cultures can be anywhere from really terribly unlivable to really amazing and wonderful. We always use the example of the stories about Google having omelet chefs and massages on tap. Mm-hmm. If that's what you had where you worked, you'd probably find that livable.
It sounds like a habitable workspace.
It is habitable. Mm-hmm. Every company is going to fit somewhere on that spectrum between unlivable and really comfortable. And, of course, the idea is always getting more comfortable because people are going to be more productive and more happy and more engaged. But the next big question is, how on earth do we do that?
No pun intended.
So culture takes time to take root. It takes money a lot of times. We have to invest in what we care about. We have to put our money where our mouth is. But eventually, as that culture grows, it will eventually carry itself. It will eventually become its own society and become its own. There's a model called attraction, selection, attrition. And the idea of that is just that once you have a company culture in place, it will attract people who have those same values. Mm-hmm. And then you will tend to hire people who have those same values. And people who work there, who whether they come in after the culture or whether they were there before, who don't fit those values will ultimately become uncomfortable and leave.
So the way that I look at company culture is a lot like a relationship, in that if you never invest in the relationship, if you never put time or effort or intention into the relationship, if you expect anything fantastic to come out of that relationship, you're going to be let down.
Absolutely.
And inside of a company, it's really, it looks like an investment in a relationship, and it's a continual investment. So you could say, well, no, I bought flowers on Valentine's Day 10 years ago.
Right.
But guess what? It doesn't last forever. Those flowers have long since wilted, unless you got the nice plastic kind.
Don't get the plastic kind. He's leading you astray. Don't do it.
But years ago, Mary, you'd say that relationships can be like teacups. And that there's a hole in the teacup, and you have to continually fill that relationship back up. It's a continual process of investment. And if you at one point stop investing in that relationship, then guess what? There's not going to be anything in the cup. And that's a little bit of what it looks like in beginning the company culture development, where if you want a habitable place that people want to be a part of, you really have to invest in that process and get it moving and recognize that it is a big investment. It's not a small investment.
Yeah, absolutely. So to understand kind of what has to be true of something before it is actually part of what we call our company culture, there are basically four characteristics that have to be true in order for a value to count as a company culture value, as opposed to just something that the owner believes.
So what does that mean?
So part A is it has to be shared. So again, if just the owner believes it, mm-hmm. or just a couple of people believe it, that doesn't count as a culture. Mm-hmm. That counts as a value that's privately held.
So previously we've used Get It Done Plumbing to mm-hmm. share examples of this. Mm-hmm. Do we want to use Get It Done, or do we want to use a different company?
Well, I don't know. Maybe as we go, we'll come up with companies for the different styles.
Well, I have one.
Okay.
Tasmanian Electric.
Tasmanian Electric.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're not located in Bothell, Washington.
Okay. They're not?
Not.
Okay.
Right. They primarily, they're a mid-range contractor, let's say about $20 million a year.
Okay.
And one of the longtime employees has recently purchased the company, Tasmanian Electric.
Okay.
Okay.
So if that longtime employee has some closely held value, mm-hmm. Let's say that it's really important. So who's our employee? Give me a name.
The employee or the
new owner.
The new owner.
Yeah.
Is Chaz Chazington.
Oh, really? Are we going to go there?
Yes.
Okay, Chaz. So Chaz, saving the environment's really important to Chaz. He really loves Tasmanian devils, and he doesn't want them to become extinct.
Okay, got it.
So as long as the environment is important to Chaz, that is a value mm-hmm. that Chaz holds. Mm-hmm. It's only once it becomes spread throughout the company, when they start having events to pick up garbage, when they start to actually propagate this everywhere, and we have a shared adherence to that value, or at least a shared understanding that is the company value, mm-hmm. that it becomes a culture mm-hmm. around the environment.
So what if it's only important to the owner? What if that value isn't important to everybody else?
Well, then that remains a value. It doesn't become a culture. Mm-hmm. So for something to be a culture, it has to be pervasive. Mm-hmm. So when we say pervasive, what we really mean is it needs to be across all levels of the organization.
At every level.
Yeah. So the admin people should understand that the environment is important to us. The field guys on all of the different, both residential and commercial teams, everybody across the organization. Anytime we have values that exist just in bubbles within the organization, then that's not a proper culture. Mm-hmm. It has to be enduring. So that means that this isn't a, this year we're going to have an environment initiative and then next year we're going to forget about it. Mm-hmm. It has to last over time in order for that to become something that's considered a company culture.
So there are some companies that have biggest loser contests mm-hmm. internally. And so if you do that once, that does not create a culture
exactly.
of biggest loser challenges.
Right.
However, you could have a series of challenges or contests that create a culture of challenges and contests.
Yeah, and again, what the culture, so, you know, our environment thing, that's mm-hmm. a really simple one.
Yep.
But a biggest loser challenge, that's really interesting because it could be a culture of challenges and contests of like everybody encouraging themselves to be their best in all different ways. Mm-hmm. It could be a health initiative. We could have a company culture that values health. And look at it from that. So one thing that happens can contribute to company culture in a lot of different ways. So that sort of message that we're trying to get across the airwaves needs to fit with the event that we're doing. But you're right. We'd have to do it every year. It has to be an ongoing, enduring thing.
Mm-hmm. Or every month.
Mm-hmm. And finally, it's implicit. So the idea here is it doesn't mean it can't be written down. We can write it down. That's fine. But people, when we study anthropology, when we understand people in groups, you can feel the cultural expectations when you walk into a room. Mm-hmm. If you've ever walked into a restaurant and looked down and wondered if you're dressed right mm-hmm. and felt uncomfortable because you suddenly feel like everyone else has a tie. I mean, this is Seattle, so nobody has a tie, but if you feel like everyone else is dressed up and you're not and you feel uncomfortable, that's a good example of an implicit cultural value that you're aware of.
Kind of a moray.
Yeah. So a story I have for this is I homeschooled the kids for a few years. And we joined a homeschooling group, which I would eventually come to learn the rhythm of those groups very well and understand that there's a lot of food health
consciousness
importance mm-hmm. in the culture that exists in that community.
Yeah.
But I was new to it and coming right out of being a public school mom, and they had a potluck Valentine's Day party, and I came to it, and on my way I was going to bake something and I didn't, and at the last minute I grabbed a clamshell of cupcakes from the QFC mm-hmm. and brought those in and set them on the table with all of the other potluck stuff, and then looked all around it and saw the quinoa salad and saw the broccoli spears and saw
the fresh fruit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then looked around at the moms and then looked around at the kids who were already lining up for those cupcakes mm-hmm. and realized that I had really misstepped. And it was something that took me a while to recover from mm-hmm. in that community. So that's the idea that implicit component has to exist, where if saving the environment is important to us, and somebody walks in with a six-pack of beer and a plastic set of rings. And
with an extra bag of rings.
And yeah, and drinks out of that and then throws it directly into the trash can, walking past the recycling to do so. Mm-hmm. They should feel that they've done something that doesn't quite fit that culture.
And this is not a commentary on environmentalism. This is a commentary on the implicit nature of company culture.
Yeah, I mean, this is just looking for any way to illustrate, you know, if we don't want to get crazy about the recycling or mm-hmm. the, we could say if you come in there with a trophy from an endangered species.
Or how about if you walk into the office with a lit cigarette?
Absolutely. That's a great example.
Right? Is the culture accepting of that or not?
Right. Absolutely. That's a great example, because you can see some places where that would be not a big deal mm-hmm. and other places where you would feel extremely uncomfortable without anyone having to say a word to you.
But they probably would.
Mm-hmm. So that's the idea of so it has to exist on that implicit level.
So what were those four requirements again?
So it has to be shared. It has to be pervasive, which means across all the different pieces of your organization. It has to be enduring, has to last for a long time. And it has to be implicit, which is that you can feel it without having to say it.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So
now what?
So you have a company culture, whether you know it or not. You might not have a very cohesive company culture. You might have different bubbles in your business where everybody perceives the culture as being totally different. But everybody perceives that your company has a set of values.
They may like it or they may not.
Absolutely. So that's kind of where we're going is, even though we have our own thoughts and feelings as business coaches about
and people
about where we would tend to direct people as far as company culture goes, the truth is that there are a lot of different styles of company culture, and they're going to largely depend on your industry and on where in the country you're located and on different parts of what you're doing. So you can see where...
Even generational components.
Mm-hmm. At a consultancy like Arcade, we think learning and adapting is really important. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about that style of culture. We want people who work here to take a chance. Mm-hmm. And if those chances don't always pan out, that's totally okay. If someone takes a chance and tries to solve a problem in a new and interesting way, and it ends up not being a success, we chalk that up as part of the cost of becoming a more adaptive company.
And the important part about that is making sure that we learn from it. Because many times we will try something new and we recognize that it didn't work out the way that we wanted it to.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't really think about that or process it. We just move on and try something different with no respect to what just happened.
Mm-hmm.
In that learning culture, it's important that we actually learn and improve from that experience.
I guess that's it. And that's it. The idea is that a mistake is actually valued, mm-hmm. because it's considered an opportunity to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in what we're going to talk about as a results culture, a mistake is something to be avoided at all costs, mm-hmm. because good results are good and bad results are bad.
And good results are the most important thing.
But all that being said, then when we talk about at, say, a hospital, we would not encourage that same learning culture among our nurses.
Hopefully they already know what they need to know to
well,
do their job.
So, and this is important, because it doesn't mean we don't want the nurses to learn new things. Mm-hmm. We do want them to learn new things. But when we use that word in terms of our culture, when we say a learning culture, we're not saying that encourages going and taking a night class. Mm-hmm. We're saying that encourages taking risks in order to learn from them. And we don't really want our nurses to just take a guess at what might help a patient and
right.
give them that medication, right?
Right?
That's not, taking those kinds of risks is not encouraged in an organization like that. We need to follow the rules at an organization like that, because what we're gonna lose if we make a mistake is mm-hmm. not worth what we learn
yeah.
from taking that kind of action.
Absolutely.
So, what we're looking at is called the 8 factors of company culture, and this is one particular model. If you Google it, you'll find there are tons of different models of company culture and how to analyze it. One of the things that's cool about this particular model is that it can characterize both the culture that exists in a company, the leading style of a leader, and the needs of the team. So
those can be different things.
Absolutely. So that's kind of the idea, is if you look at all these factors and if you understand what the company culture looks like, you want your leaders to generally lead in ways that are a good fit with that company culture. And hopefully your teams, what they value and what they need, will also be a good fit with that company culture.
But at Tasmanian Electric, mm-hmm. the previous owner really expected results, and that was the most mm-hmm. important thing to his team.
Mm-hmm.
But now Chaz Chazington, mm-hmm. with his environmentally conscious approach,
mm-hmm.
he's much more invested in being adaptive.
Right. Well, honestly, so let's talk through. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna consult Chaz, and we're gonna tell him what all the different kinds of options are for his culture that he wants to try to build.
Mm-hmm.
And we're gonna tell him kind of what those look like, and then he's gonna have to make a choice. Mm-hmm. So, a lot of this has a really cool chart that goes with it, which you can see if you look at our website, but we're gonna try to put this together in a way that you don't need to see the chart for it to make sense. But still, I'm gonna go ahead and explain to you what the underlying axes are on the chart, what the two different spectrums are on this chart. So basically, this way of looking at company culture says there are two important things. One important thing is, how do we as a company interact with other people? So one end of that spectrum is independent. And this means we put value on people kind of taking action by themselves, being autonomous, getting results by themselves, solving problems on their own, independent. The other end of that spectrum is interdependent, which means we put value on the relationships between our teams. We want everybody to get along. We want everyone to be good at working together. We want everyone to communicate.
Like the military.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So you will see any given company, its culture falls somewhere on that spectrum, somewhere between independent and interdependent. Everybody's not 100% one or the other. So the other axis is, how do we respond to change? So on the one end of the spectrum, we have people who want stability, people who really don't ever want anything to change. We want it all to stay the same. On the other end of that spectrum, we have flexibility. We want to adapt. We want the room and the freedom to change things however we need to. So when we put those two spectrums together and we look at how we interact with all of those things, we come up with these different styles of company culture.
Looks like a typical four quadrant shape.
Mm-hmm. And so if you want the visual of understanding more about how each of these styles really interfaces with the spectrum of independence to interdependence and stability to flexibility, feel free to take a look at that on the blog. What this gives us is, it gives us eight different styles. And the idea here is that a company culture isn't made up of just one of these styles. It's usually going to be two or even three of these styles. But each style emphasizes a different thing. So the first style that we talk about is the caring style. So the caring style of company culture basically says, I want this to be a warm, collaborative, and welcoming place where people help and support one another. It feels like a big family.
Mm-hmm. Super cozy.
Absolutely. So if that's what Chaz cares about most of all, is that it feels like a family here, then he's going to take steps to move into the right quadrant in order to build this caring company culture.
So that caring company culture would attract a certain type of new member. If we're trying to recruit people mm-hmm. into a caring culture, then it helps to have that caring culture well established.
Absolutely. And on the other hand, people who just want to go to work and come home and don't really want any of this touchy-feely stuff mm-hmm. are not going to be attracted to this company.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the self-leveling.
So I've seen a bit of that in sales, mm-hmm. where some companies or some individuals, they're very self-motivated, they're very driven, they're very independent, and they're almost like a hired gun, in that they'll come in and they want to be held responsible for their results and they want to profit from their results.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So the second is called purpose. So a purpose-oriented culture, you want your organization to feel like a compassionate and tolerant place where people try to do good for the long-term future of the world.
This is totally Chaz.
I knew Chaz wanted a purpose-based culture the minute you explained him to mm-hmm. me. But the idea here is that it's focused around a purpose, and we see this a lot in nonprofit organizations where the most important thing to the people there are that they're helping to feed children or helping to change the world in some way, and that's what matters most.
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So people who need to feel like they're making a difference in the world will be happy in purpose-driven cultures, as long as the purpose that underlies it is the right one.
Right.
So then we have what we call a learning culture. So again, We often see in medicine where they want people to go back to school and take classes and increase their education. Mm-hmm. But that's not what we're talking about when we say learning. A learning culture is an inventive and open-minded place where people spark new ideas and explore alternatives. So again, this is really about taking risks and considering mistakes a part of the cost of those risks that we take in order to become better, stronger, more adaptive.
So in our example, if we're talking about arcades specifically, we have our part of our code of honor that says team members of Arcade, we promise to face new challenges with a spirit of curiosity and enthusiasm. That kind of fits into the learning model.
Absolutely, absolutely. So the next category is enjoyment. So when we focus on enjoyment in our company culture, it means we want a lighthearted place where people tend to do what makes them happy.
Southwest?
No.
No? They're like always having parties in the
Southwest Airlines?
Yeah.
Nobody ever seems happy to work for an airline.
No.
I've seen
some fabulous Southwest flight attendants.
I guess, maybe.
Who else?
Well, when I went through the questionnaire for this, mm-hmm. we showed enjoyment as our number two factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you should have fun, absolutely.
Absolutely.
But if we're thinking about big box stores or we're thinking about McNutters.
McNutters isn't a thing. So I think that we see this a bit in the tech sector, mm-hmm. where
big fish games.
Game companies, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Hard suit labs in our building.
Mm-hmm. I haven't ever been in there, so I couldn't speak to whether that's the culture there.
Hard suit, feel free to send some messages.
Feel free to let us know.
Let us know what your culture looks like.
Let us know how much you love working at Hard Suit. But even like Google, places like that, you hear a lot where it's important to them that their employees want to be there every
Wizards
day.
Wizards of the Coast.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'd love to consult for Wizards of the Coast.
Are you listening,
call
Wizards?
Call us, Wizards. So all of that lives up on the flexibility end of the spectrum. Adaptive companies that change and basically where the employees kind of have a lot of control over how things are done. So now we're moving down into the stability end of the spectrum.
This was where the previous owner held the company.
Absolutely.
In Tasmanian Electric.
So the vast majority of companies that exist in the world today have a culture that is considered a results-based culture. So a results-based culture is an outcome-oriented and merit-based place where people aspire to achieve top performance. So this is where...
That's a mouthful.
Yeah. So this is where it matters how many widgets you turn out. It matters how many dollars you bring in. It does not matter how much your team does. It matters how much you do. Mm-hmm. And if you supported a team member a lot and enabled them to get twice as much productivity, that reflects on you, zero. Mm-hmm. So you can see where...
So it's more like an individual factory.
Yeah, absolutely.
Individual worker at a factory.
Absolutely. So results-based cultures, there are industries where that's how it needs to be. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, we default to that, and it's not necessarily the best way to keep people happy or to get things done.
Well, and I think a lot of results-based companies tend to be older companies.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk a little bit later in the podcast about how some of these factors work in terms of generational elements.
Well, and this was most certainly the case for the preceding owner at Tasmanian Electric.
Right. So he was very results-based.
That's right.
So then we have a similar but slightly different culture, which is authority-based. So an authority culture is a competitive place where people strive to gain personal advantage. So in an authority culture, we're going to define that by having strong leaders who emphasize confidence and dominance. This is where you do what you're supposed to do because you don't want to mess with the boss man.
So is this military?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The military is authority-based. And it's basically based on feeling like our leaders don't show weakness. Mm-hmm. It's feeling like our leader is the top, the alpha dog. Mm-hmm.
And they're there for a reason.
And if we have an authority-based culture and then someone steps in who is a weaker leader, we will suffer a great deal.
Could this be a stereotypical high-powered consultancy?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or law firm.
Law firm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. And so when we have an authority-based culture and we see a change coming, especially if we see someone coming in who's maybe very talented at their trade but is not a dominant leader type, then we want to scramble to change that culture before that change happens because performance will tank otherwise.
Yeah.
So finally we have, well, not finally, we have two more. We have safety culture. So this is a predictable place where people are risk conscious and think things through carefully. Safety is defined by planning, caution, and preparedness. Employees are united by a desire to feel protected and anticipate change. And finally, order.
So what would be an example of safety in a company?
So safety-based culture basically is going to come back to paying attention to what the perceived threats are to our business and focusing on those. So where we talk about focusing on our strengths in order to try to shore ourselves up against those threats, if we had a safety-based culture, we'd really focus on the threats rather than focus on our strengths and look at each possible threat and sort of value our ability to prevent those threats above all else.
So what we're talking about here is a high level of stability.
Yes. Right. So we're not talking here about safety in terms of like in construction.
Yeah.
Safety should be very important.
Right.
Keeping people from falling off of things is very important. Mm-hmm. But that really is about caring about our people.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about a safety-based culture, what we're really talking about is protecting our business from external threats to that business above looking out for our people, above even maybe looking out for our clients, depending on what those threats are.
Yeah. Well, and what we're really talking about is in this safety culture, they're really averse to change.
Absolutely, absolutely. And finally, order is very similar. So this is a methodical place where people tend to play by the rules and want to fit in. So we see order, I think, a bit in medical industry, where there is a very specific set of rules, and we follow those rules without fail.
What about government culture?
Absolutely.
Working in a government
Absolutely.
Office.
We had to go down to the transportation department today for our son's school bus, and everything there is very much built by order.
Yeah.
Everyone has to follow the rules. And again, that's frustrating because often you can't change that culture when it's within a government organization. Those rules are, and that's, I guess that's a really good way to think about that, because when you look at that, those rules are the number one important thing.
Yeah.
You don't break those rules for any reason. And when we go into a hospital and there are a lot of rules that they don't break, not ever for any reason, really they're sticking to those rules to protect their patients. That's why they live by those rules. But often when we go into a government office, they stick to those rules just because those rules are the important thing, period.
So there are types of businesses that can look like government agencies, the way that they run their business.
Mm-hmm.
And the question or concern I would have for those companies, if you think about some insurance companies, they're going to be risk averse, they're going to be passive and moving to change and dragging their feet as the world marches on. The caution there would be, make sure you understand if you need to change to stay relevant.
Absolutely.
Without being turned under.
Absolutely. So the truth is that likely your company culture that you communicate is your own unique recipe of more than one of these factors.
I call it hot mix.
I suppose you could call it that.
Your own hot mix.
Your own hot mix of more than one of these factors. And usually what we do is focus in on the top two or three of them and look at what our company culture is as a result of those.
What does the existing culture look like? What do the people want? What are they built for? Mm-hmm. What kind of culture do they thrive in?
Absolutely. What kind of culture does your team thrive in? And what kind of leaders do you have? Because if you have a company that is largely based in, again, let's go back and say learning, and then you have a supervisor who's heavily results-based, he's gonna have trouble leading in your organization. And actually, I think we've seen this scenario play out many times, where someone can be a strong leader and a good leader, but they're leading to a different culture, and that can be a problem.
So how do we put all this theory to work, though?
Well, so there are a lot of things that you can do with this model. So the first obvious part is to assess what our culture is right now, because there's what we call our aspirational culture. There's where we want to go, where we want to be, but ultimately there's also where we are right now. So by assessing both of those things, it helps us draw the map for us to get there, wherever it is we're trying to go. If we don't like that we're currently a results-based culture, we can try to figure out how to move and understand how our culture is impacting our organization right now. So this is kind of that piece where we're talking about looking at our leaders, looking at our teams, looking at our culture, and making sure that those things are actually in alignment.
And this is a key diagnostic point that we take when we start with full-scale development. When we're walking our clients through the development process, we need to take a read on what their culture currently looks like, what is the perception of that culture from the employee standpoint, and where does leadership want to take the company with respect to culture?
Absolutely. So the last piece is to kind of talk about some of the trends that are happening in terms of these cultural styles. So the first piece is one of the articles that I read, an interesting statement in that article that I believe to be true, is in a dynamic, uncertain environment in which organizations must be more agile, flexibility gains importance.
Why would we need to be agile?
Right. So this, in the article where I read it, was really meant to differentiate between different industries. For example, to say in tech, maybe flexibility is very important. But I feel like as tech starts to kind of slowly eat the world, everything becomes tech. Everything becomes that dynamic, uncertain environment. We need, as the internet takes over and as the world changes, I think we're moving more and more to a place where those flexible culture styles are going to be more valuable to us than the static ones.
So in that model, when we're talking about flexibility, one of the interesting things about construction is that it is one of the most regressive industries, one of the most slowest to change industries that exists. And construction has always been at the tail end of the curve of change in with respect to leaning into tech. And it's only now that construction is actually recognizing the value that technology brings. And they're still struggling to catch up, but there are a lot of cool tools that are out there. But that agility and flexibility in the culture is something that is really just starting to grow.
Absolutely. So the other important piece here is to understand, and again, these are not necessarily proven facts at this point.
Gross stereotypes.
They're more stereotypes. But generally speaking, boomers are going to tend toward stability and they're going to tend toward independence. So, you know, one of the things we talk a lot about is between the generations, between the boomers and the millennials, with the Gen Xers kind of in the middle, not caring about anything. There's a lot of trouble getting these groups to be able to communicate with each other and to work on the same page. So our baby boomer crowd, what we often refer to as Generation Analog, because they developed before the computer revolution, they are focused on stability because that is the old way of doing things. Flexibility is really, we're always looking at the new ways when that's what we talk about. Back in the 50s and the 60s, the stability methods were everything. Stability was king. Boomers are stability and boomers are independence. So that looks like results and that looks like authority.
Primarily.
That's what that looks like.
Yeah, but if we're splitting the baby, because then we're saying millennials are leaning into purpose
and caring. And the discussion there is that boomers will tell you that millennials don't have the ability to self-motivate, don't have the ability to solve problems for themselves, that all they ever did in school was work in groups, and now they need...
I thought we were avoiding stereotypes.
Well, sure, but this is what we hear. What we hear.
Absolutely.
And again, I have my own thoughts and feelings about that, but the truth is, even though it's not that millennials are not able to function in an independent environment, but I do think that we're seeing that we're seeing that change happen where they are, because of the internet and because of the way that we're more connected to the world around us, they are becoming more interdependent. They are becoming more relation focused, more team focused. And I think, too, that, because of the way that the world has changed, we see millennials often struggling in an overly static, overly stable environment. They want and need, and again, these are all generalizations, but they want and need the ability to do things in the way that makes sense to them. Mm-hmm. And so then when we look at the flexibility, the enjoyment, the learning, the purpose, the caring, these are the environments where millennials will thrive. And results, authority, safety, and order are what are often more comfortable for boomers. And when we understand those things and that those are the places those people are coming from, again, it can help us use these to kind of build a bridge that lets everyone kind of get some of what they need out of our organization.
Well, I feel like we could run a whole episode just on that.
We absolutely could. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to.
But I think we're up for time.
We are out of time. We don't have really any good outtakes.
I guess we had some good stuff in the beginning.
Yeah, and we had cadence.
Yeah. No, we don't need cadence. So we covered a bit of conversation about kind of the structure of company culture. I think that's about it for us. You can find us on...
You don't know where.
Friendster?
No, you can find us at www.thecriticalpathwithmaryandjason.com. You can find us on Twitter at Arcade Wayfinder. You can find us on LinkedIn. Feel free to connect. We don't have a jetpack this week.
What's our
jetpack?
What about AOL?
We're not on AOL. Stop. What's our jetpack this week? Is it AOL? AOL Discs.
AOL Discs.
Does anyone remember AOL Discs?
I do.
They would send them to you, and we would always use them for, like, our school assignments and stuff because they were free discs.
Coasters.
That was before the CDs.
Oh, remember talking about the proper floppy discs.
Yes. 3.5-inch floppy disk that AOL would send you.
You have to put a little piece of tape over the...
Over the copy protect. You had to hack it, basically. But then you could use it for your school stuff.
I'd hardly call that hacking.
I mean...
By today's standards.
Look, it's a life hack, okay? Right. By today's standards. Like, show me some punk kid who can, like, hack into whatever system and then see if they can figure out how to save data onto that 3.5-inch drive.
So it's hack the planet.
Hack the Gibson.
Hack the Gibson.
Hack the planet.
Yeah.
I used to take those discs apart and make earrings out of the inside.
Ooh.
The actual disc inside there.
Yeah.
And I walk around with earrings on made out of discs.
All right. So, hack the Gibson.
Oh, hack the Gibson is the jetpack. Got it. Hack the Gibson.
Yeah.
So email us, call us. Tweet us, text us.
Yeah.
Hack the Gibson. LinkedIn, message us.
We'll send you a gift package.
We will.
Including one of our shiny new growlers.
Yeah, it'll be awesome.
Check them out.
Stay tuned for outtakes. Now I'm recording.
Hello, and welcome to The Critical Path with Mary and Jason Sturgeon. I'm wearing Dad's glasses.
Rock out with your dad.
You can't say that.
You can't say that. Dad, that is so inappropriate. My name is Dad. I make inappropriate jokes at inappropriate times, and I drink beer.
Hey, that's not beer. Stop. That's my water.
What are you doing?
Leave.
What
are you doing?
You have work to do.
Move along. Go do accounting work.
No.
Go do accounting work. Move along. We have company culture talk about.
Okay, have fun talking about company culture. This better be in the outtakes.
You wouldn't know if it was or not because you've literally never listened to our podcast.
They bully me every day. I'm an abuse victim.
Okay.
Not funny.